Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for November 21st, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the ATP Finals as well as the season in general. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to get all set for the Australian Open in January with Grand Slam Tennis Tours. They have you connected with your tickets, your hotels, and everything else. This week's podcast is also co-hosted by Parsa Sammy. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. You know, getting towards the tail end of November. Still no snow on the ground, as I was mentioning to you off air, which is great for me. Keeps my summer mood going. Not too cold as well, so hopefully that goes. And I know people are going to be like, oh man, but Christmas is coming up in a month and everything. So hopefully at that time, there'll be some snow for everybody and they can enjoy. But for now, I'm good with, you know, clean streets and we can, you know, get out there. Commuting is not too bad and everything is great. But now, getting on to the tennis side of things, season is over. We had Grigor Dimitrov, Parsa, winning the ATP Finals for the biggest title of his career, no less against David Goffin, who defeated Roger Federer in the semifinals, and we had Jack Sock in the semifinals. And you know, but this is the year that we had, Parsa. You know, when you have, you know, it's like, you know, you're doing a Hollywood movie, and you have four or five top, you know, actors and actresses, and four of them drop out, and you have a couple left, and you have to get these subs in. And it's no disrespect to anybody else, but you're not going to have your top-tier players like your Djokovic's, your Serena's, your, you know, Murray's and Wawrinka's and Nishikori's and all of these, you know, these players are not around. You're going to have a Dimitrov-Goffin final. The potential for that is there. I was honestly shocked, Parsa, that Federer didn't win this tournament. I mean, after he went 3-0 in the round robin group, and then you knew he had to get through Goffin, and then Jack Sock or Dimitrov, all guys that he's owned throughout his careers. I think he was something like 16-0. You know, he looked a little bit irritable going through the first stages of the tournament, maybe not playing his best, but it was still an indoor tournament. He's coming off of wins in Shanghai and Basel. I mean, for me, the writing was on the wall. And then for him to go down in a tight match to Goffin, guy who really can't hit him off the court. No, he's solid as a rock. He takes the ball early. I mean, very inexplicable loss there. I mean, but it happened, and, you know, that's what it is now. Federer's on vacation for a couple weeks and going to get back, you know, to, you know, playing again at the end of December, getting his 2018 yeah. campaign going. So what were your thoughts on that?
Right, Nima? Hey, yeah. You're not, you know, it's not a perfect science, and every day you have to bring it. That's the hard thing about tennis. You know, exactly. If he wasn't feeling well, if he just for whatever reason didn't sleep well, his kids yes. woke him up, who knows? But it's you have to deal with every situation as it comes and try to do the best to get through it. And that's why the years where we've had these dominant performances by players, it's really been something spectacular. It's really something where the players live the lifestyle, they breathe the tennis, and they can get the most out of themselves consistently on it. And it's just not easy to do. It's not necessarily just who you are, but you have to go out and prove who you are every day. And I think that's the lesson you learned from Federer losing the semis there. As dominant as he was, and as many matches as he's won on the indoor circuit in the fall, it's just not a perfect science, and anything can happen, and I'm sure that there are opportunities there that he had against Goffin that could have turned the match the other way. He didn't execute, missed by an inch, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, people will sit there and say he didn't play that well. Yeah, he didn't play that well. But, I mean, I looked at the stats, and they were very close. I think Goffin won maybe something like 4 or 5 points more at the end of the match. And then I looked at the first serve points won, first serve percentages, aces, double faults. It was not like, you know, Federer was winning 30% of his second serve points and he got broken 8 times, something crazy like that. It was a pretty, you know, the guy, he just got beat. And Gauffanis had, you know, he's riding on fumes. For me, the surprising thing was, you know, for him to barely beat a hobbling Nadal after hobbling himself in his first match, getting absolutely destroyed by Dimitrov 0-2 in the round robin, and then going out and beating Federer. I mean, if you had put, I'm not a betting guy, but if I had put, I would never have put money on Federer losing that match. I would have lost a lot of money. I'll tell you that. And I'm on this stuff, you know, I'm watching this stuff every day. So, shocking result, that's still for me. And it would have been good for Federer because it would have really, I don't know how this hurts his confidence going into the next year. Maybe he does nothing. Maybe he does something. I mean, time will tell. But we know that the book is closed, so to speak, on this year. And we're getting ready for that new chapter to open on 2018. And I know everybody's ready to go because there's no more time to recover. I mean, you know, Djokovic has to get back out there. Murray's got to get back out there. Nishikori has to get back out there. Milos, Stan, maybe Serena. I know. Congratulations to Serena for just getting married a couple of days ago. We wish her all the best going forward. See if she's going to get back out there. I don't know. But all I can tell you is, Parsa, this year, the Australian Open was the best Grand Slam of the year for me. I'm pretty sure next year it's going to be the same thing. So
yeah, it seems like it has to be, right? Because guys and ladies get healthy and they train hard over their little break and they're fresh. And so you get everyone there and healthy. And that's the key. As the season has went on last year, it was just one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. It was a pretty rough year. I mean, who knows what it could be attributed to, but it wasn't a healthy year. I mean, maybe, Nima, I just came up with this, but is it possible that because we have these aging athletes and they're doing so well later into their years, as you know, maybe that's why we're experiencing so many injuries, is because these are older athletes now. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think you're also looking at the dominance of these players as well. I mean, Serena obviously wasn't injured. She took time to develop a family. You know what I mean?
Right.
And but that's, you know, obviously ladies.
But that's also had relation to age though, right? If she was 24, I don't know.
Yeah, she's not worried about that.
Right.
And because she knows she has time to still do that in her life. So, yeah, I mean, so that's that part of it. Djokovic dominating for many years, you know, and, you know, his arm was breaking down and then he needed a break mentally. Murray, you know, the guy is just an absolute warrior out there. And he works his butt off every day. And, you know, for him not to break down, and he's had a back surgery before. We know he's been injured. And then for him to exude as much energy as he had to get back to number one, to get to number one in the world was a tremendous effort for him. And then Nishikori has been injury prone since we've seen him at 18. Milos has had how many injuries, you know, for how many years? It looks like every year he has one. Rafa, you know, he just got another one, and he's the king of injuries, let's be honest. You know, Fed has had some back problems. So, you know, you look at the top 10, let's start with the men's here, Parsa, right now. So, season is over, everybody's in the Maldives Islands or golfing somewhere, relaxing. But Nadal, number one, Fed, two, Dimitrov, three, Zverev, Alex, Dominic Thiem, Cilic, David Goffin, Sock, Wawrinka, and Carreño Busta. So, and then we have Parsa. This is the most interesting one for me. Right at number 11, we have Del Potro. Which for me, you definitely have to put him in the conversation for jumping back into the middle of the pack next year. Because he has almost 0 points to defend in the first 2 or 3 months of the year. Didn't play Australia. I think he played his first tournament maybe in Delray Beach. Yep. So he's got that opportunity. Didn't really do much in Indian Wells in Miami either, for the most part. So, I mean, and he loves those tournaments. You know, the Latin flavor in Miami. He loves Indian Wells. He's a former finalist there. You know he can play well in Australia. I mean, watch out. Like, he can, you know, a guy like Carreño Busta, Jack Sock. I mean, he's better than these guys. I don't think anybody's going to say he's not. And
yeah, but you got Stan coming back, Milos coming back. I mean, there's some heavy hitters. So
and yeah, and that's why the Australian Open is going to be so interesting, because you have Milos Raonic coming in as a 24th seed. I mean, he could face Nadal in round three. You know what I'm saying? Like he could face.
Although I think that's bad for Milos. You know, I think he worked hard to get the proper seeding to now get to the semis of Grand Slams. I don't think it's a good thing for him.
No, of course not. But you never know, right? Like you never know. And then you're gonna have Murray as the 16th seed. So he could face Nadal. You could have a situation where Nadal could face Milos in round three, Murray in round four, right? Then Jack Sock in the quarters. Like Alex Zverev in the semis and Federer in the finals. He's not going to win that tournament, with all due respect to Nadal. I mean, I think that's just too tough for anybody. So that's what I'm saying. So that's what, for Australian, unless all these guys lose, you never know what's going to happen, right? Because as we saw this year in Australia, we had Murray and Djokovic losing super early. And then you just had the floodgates opening with, you know, this whole Nadal and Federer renaissance for the year, right? So it's going to be... And I'm looking forward to it, man. Like, that's, for me, going to be my tournament of the year. And now, I would like to talk about some scenarios, because, you know, later this week, I'm going to write, you know, that article I write every year on predicting the 2018 top 10 and how it's going to look at the end of 18. And, I mean, I'm very comfortable in saying I was completely off this year. And anybody wants to go on the site and check that out. And, I mean, I think Djokovic finishing number one. And I had Nadal finishing 10th.
And he finished, wow. You know, I mean, and, it's pretty hard to tell.
Yeah,
that, you know,
exactly. It's impossible.
Six of the top 10 were going to be out.
Exactly. And then, good luck saying, you know, Goffin was going to be 7, Karina Busta was going to be 10. I mean, these things. Karina Busta, obviously, you know, we talk about guys getting lucky and whatnot, but I mean, it's the reality, right? But you got to still get it done. You know, like if somebody gives you an opportunity, you don't have to play a seed to get to the U.S. Open semis like Karina Busta. You're going to take it, man. And he didn't lose a set until he lost to Anderson, right?
Yeah, it's not his problem. That's
no,
for sure.
100%. And so it's the way it goes. And, you know, credit to all these guys. A lot of guys made a lot of money this year, Parso, and they made a lot of points. You got a guy like Grigor Dimitrov standing right now at 5,150 points, right? And if you look at Dimitrov, he just won 1,500 points for winning the tour finals, and he's got 1,000 from Cincy. So until August, late August of next year, he's going to have 2,500 points secure on his tally, right? So, you know, just to give you an example, if he doesn't win one match until August next year, Parsa, like he could go 0-15, whatever it is, he'll still be around 12 in the world. Not bad, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the cushion that he's made for himself. You know, a guy like Jack Sock's got 3,165 points, right? He got a bunch in London, and then he also won Paris. So he's got about a 1,500 cushion there that he's going to be playing with until basically the last couple weeks of the year. Paris and London are in November, basically. You know what I'm saying? So this is, you're going to see these guys hanging around. And that's what's going to make it interesting, right? Because although we have, you know, Murray and Djokovic with pretty much nothing to defend, you got, you know, guys like Dimitrov and Jack Sock and Goffin who, you know, tallied a ton of points after the U.S. Open. So all four Grand Slams complete, then they're doing something. Then you got a guy
It also could be said, Nima, that Dimitrov may not make the tour final. Sock may not even make the tour final, and the same with Goffin.
And then at that point, you're going to see a massive drop in their rankings. Unless they do some wicked stuff at the beginning of the year, and they make up for it. You know what I'm saying? So, like, they override it. So because
they'll have that chance. Because of their ranking and seeding now.
Exactly. You perfectly said. And then you got a guy like Alex Zverev, who Dimitrov just squeezed out for the third position. He was number three for a few weeks there. You know, he has no points in the slams to defend. And I think he did pretty well in Australia, but everything else, first round French, didn't do that much at Wimbledon, didn't do anything, lost second round to George at the US Open. I mean, this is a guy who I think he's going to have to start managing his schedule better. Break it down to maybe maybe 18 tournaments next year, something like that. 20 max, max. I wouldn't play more than that if I were him. And just really work on staying fresh, because you can see physically he breaks down, I think, not like in an injury way. I just think he gets tired because he's still a young guy and he's very slight and he's got a big frame to lug around. And he's going to have to manage that a little bit better, because I think if he has a good Australian Open, he could maybe win that tournament. But that's a big ask for, you know, a young guy who's never done that well in a slam. Then he's going to have a fantastic year, because then he's going to really propel himself into, you know, gaining another, whatever, you know, 1,500 points. Then you're talking, right? Then he's like, he has a chance to, you know, get up to number two in the world, even maybe if Fed doesn't have a good Australian Open. But that there's a lot of work to be done there too. And then you got Thiem, who we know overplays. And let's be honest, I mean, Dominic Thiem, Parsa, in a day and age where we have such versatile court players that can play on every surface, and I know Thiem has won a grass title and I know he's won hard court titles, but as an overall entity, he's not that great on anything except for clay. And he really showed that this year. I mean, he did nothing on hard. I mean, he played terrible. And I think that match at the US Open really hurt his confidence. And I think he'll get over that by next year. But we'll see how he, you know, transpires. And we have Cilic, who's, I think, going to remain in and around the top 10. I think he's got enough experience and he's good enough to do that. Goffin, I really don't know. Jack Sock, I don't know. You know, Wawrinka, we haven't seen him for a while, Parsa, but he's still 9 in the world. You know, off of the finals in Paris, off of the finals in Indian Wells. So he's got some decent points up there that he's, you know, sleeping on. Carreño Busta, who I fully believe will not finish 10 next year. Del Potro, I fully believe, will be inside the top 10. And then you got Djokovic, he's 12 in the world, Parsa. This is a 12-time Grand Slam champion at 12. What's he going to do next year? You know, Parsa, spending a second here on Djokovic, I was mentioning to you that I listened to a podcast yesterday with Lewis Holes, the Greatness podcast, and Djokovic was talking about growing up in his early childhood in Serbia and the adversity that he had to deal with and how that really molded him. And I mean, it was just an incredible thing to listen to, and it was quite emotional, actually, too. He was crying, and he talked about how he's a UNICEF ambassador, and he went to Syria, and he was spending some time with, you know, the children there that have lost their houses and homes and how they're dealing with that and how that moved him. And, you know, this is a guy with a lot of perspective. I think he looks fresh, and I think he's coming back super strong next year. And I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be, you know, he's not finishing 12 next year. And I would be, I would not be uncomfortable in saying, Parsa, that he's finishing number one next year. You know what I mean? But it's all going to depend for me and on Australia. I just want to know if you have any thoughts on Joker before I tell you my whole scenario for how I think next year is going to break down.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately what it comes down to is that Djokovic is going to be completely fresh and ready to go.
Yes.
That's I think, what we learned from Nadal and Federer's hiatus last year, is that those guys came in sprinting. And the disadvantage of someone like Nadal or Federer, who are now healing injuries and they're trying to, you know, get themselves right, take vacation, mentally free themselves, blah, blah, blah. They sort of roll right back into the calendar and they're back at it. While these guys, Djokovic has been home, you know, meditating every day and doing yoga and spending time with his kids and recharging mentally, recharging physically, retooling his game, I'm sure, and closing any holes that he may or may not have had or that he felt that he had. And he's in full-on preparation mode for a long training camp. And so with the side of having to play a few matches to get mentally tough, I think it's very reasonable that Djokovic finishes number one. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's health that's really the determining factor. And that's what we're going to find out this year, is how banged up is Federer, Nadal, Wawrinka, Milos, Murray, you know, Djokovic. Who's going to be the guy who recovers the best? And whoever I think that's going to be, I think that's how they're going to finish. Because the talent is unquestionable. And so it becomes a matter of do they get to play the tennis the way it's supposed to be played and in the right percentages. So that's it.
Yeah, and I think for me, See, Parsa, this is how I look at next year going and why I think Australia is so important. Because Nadal obviously has never won the Australian Open twice. It's the only slam that he doesn't have at least twice. So he's still, that's a massive thing for him. And that really also propels him to the stratosphere of greatest of all time, in my opinion. Because if you can, in this day and age, if you've won every major at least twice, that's remarkable. And I mean, Djokovic is really only a French Open away from doing that himself. And same with Federer. Federer is not going to do it, I'll tell you that right now. Djokovic definitely still has a chance. And Nadal still has a small window too. If Nadal can win the Australian Open, I definitely think he wins the French next year as well. He'll have two slams. He's not going to win Wimbledon. He's not going to win the US Open. So from that perspective, I think that he still has a great chance of finishing number one. Because the Australian Open victory will also override the US Open victory. But at that time, he'll still, once he wins the French probably, he'll hold three of the four majors. But to offset him, I mean, Djokovic really has to go on this run of winning like 5-6 tournaments in a row, which he's capable of, but that's really what it's going to take, right? And he plays amazing in the fall as well, too, as we know. So, yeah, that's going to be, for me, interesting to see. If Nadal doesn't win the Australian Open, and he loses like in the quarters or something like that, then that really puts a lot of pressure on his clay court season, which I still think he can kind of grind through. I think it will take, you know, the toll on him that we've always seen that it does. He still might get through it, winning two or three titles, including Roland Garros. And then that's going to affect him for the grass and then the subsequent hard court season. But I think right now, Australia, for me, even though it's about only a couple months away, less than 2 months away now, that next major, that for me is the most important tournament of 2018 for so many reasons. I think it really just sets up everything. And then Roger Federer, he's defending champion. What's he going to do, right? And it's like,
so who do you have, Mr. Nedari? That's what everyone really wants to know.
Well, this is
who
what
do you have? Because you are the man when it comes to prognostication, and you've been picking them strong. I would say at like a nice solid 75% of the time, you're nailing this thing way beforehand. Who do you have?
I have right now, if you're going to ask me today, if Nadal's knees, if Nadal's knees are okay, which I think he can kind of recover, I'm taking Nadal over Alex Zverev if they're on opposite sides of the draw, Australian Open final. I'm taking Nadal to win the French. I don't know who he would play in the finals just yet because that's really far off. I have Federer winning Wimbledon. I have Djokovic winning the US Open. That's as of today.
Wow, I love it.
Yeah, but
I have to tweet that so we have it.
Yeah, and I will. But I also might have Zverev winning the Australian Open. It's coming. I don't know when it's going to come for him, but it's there. I have a very hard time seeing Federer go back-to-back in a hardcourt major. I think something's going to happen. You know, he's going to come in. He's going to play well. The thing with Federer is kind of like an Agassi, who's obviously coaching Djokovic right now, is he's the type of guy, he doesn't need to hit that many balls. For him, it's just health. Whereas a guy like Nadal, Murray, Djokovic, I think they need to hit a lot of balls because they're not as clean and as talented, let's be honest. I mean, they might win more Grand Slams. They might, whatever, Djokovic might win 25 Grand Slams at the end of his career. I don't think he's as talented as Federer. That's my honest opinion.
And I think it also matters that the age does factor.
For sure, yeah.
When I used to take 2 weeks off, I wouldn't be able to hit a ball on the court, when I was 20. But now when I take 2 weeks off, I'm just better. So it's changed quite a bit. I've also hit a ton of tennis balls, so I know what's supposed to happen, you know?
Yes.
And I think that there's that factor as well. You know, you hear the stories that as you get older, you start focusing more on fitness and less impact and less hitting. And keep that for the match play. I think Murray's obviously going to have to make an adjustment like that if he hasn't already. I think Nadal already has made that adjustment. I think those days of 5-hour practices, 6-hour practices are, you know, they still exist maybe, but they exist in a 10-day block instead of a daily occurrence. So I think each guy has their own formula, and woman has their own formula to finding their peak performance. And I think as you age, you figure it out. I think you mentioned Zverev, which is a good pick, but maybe he hasn't yet figured that out. And actually, a side note to that, I read an article about Dimitrov, and after the ATP final win, and he said, you know, the difference is I now know what I need to do in order to win. So I'd like to see him with all this confidence and his know-how and his understanding of how to prepare, compete next year as well. Where do you think he fits in, Nima?
So my problem with Dimitrov is, and it's something you talked about, I think, a bunch of podcasts ago, and you were talking about his serve and how you saw some technical issues and stuff like that. And, you know, I look at Dimitrov's game. I mean, what an athlete this guy is. When he's in so full good. Flight, he's super athletic guy. You know, like, top shelf. I mean, professional athleticism, as I like to call it. You know, Monfils is a little bit reckless athleticism. You know what I mean? He's out there doing all any. I mean, we know how great of an athlete he is, but he does it in a reckless format that becomes injury prone and not very, you know, productive, you know, so to speak. Dimitrov is a little bit more productive and very flexible guy, super strong guy. And I think for me, that's, you know, what won him these last few tournaments. From a technical perspective, I think his groundies are good. I don't have any issues with that. He's got good touch. He's hit some amazing drop volleys. He's returning a little bit better, slicing well. I just don't think his serve is good enough at the top levels of the game to win tight five-set matches on a consistent basis. That's my opinion. I think his serve will break down. Like a guy like Kyrgios, for me, if he's really into it, I would take him any day over Dimitrov. Alex Zverev, I will take his serve any day over Dimitrov's. Del Potro, I would take his serve any day over Dimitrov's. And I know these guys are taller guys and whatnot, but who cares? I would take Federer's serve over all of those guys, and he's shorter than all of those guys, right? That's you know, that's a different story. But for me, I think with Grigor, you're going to see a guy now who's going to, I mean, he's on top of the world at the moment. I mean, he's coming in playing his best tennis, and he was a semifinalist last year in Australia, barely lost to Nadal in one of the matches of the year. So he's feeling great, and he's still on hard courts, which really suits him. So yeah, he could definitely, he's going probably at least quarters, but again, who knows? He's the number three seed. He might face, you know, Djokovic in the fourth round, right? Like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. Murray, you know, might beat him in the third round. I don't, like, it's going to, these draws are all over the place at this point. You know, Milos is lurking, as we said. We have what's Nishikori ranked right now? Nishikori is 22 in the world, right? That's another guy. He's going to be lurking. You know, Kyrgios is 21 in the world. These are not, you know, Burdick is 19 in the world. Like, these are not, these are all, you know, guys who have been in and around, you know, the top 10 for many, many, many years. And they've gained confidence now in these last few months with all of the really top tier stars out of commission, right? So that's why, you know, it's a very interesting, you know, breakdown as we move into, you know, Australia. So for me, it's going to be, it's going to be an amazing thing to see. So, as I've mentioned countless times, really looking forward to it. So I think that's pretty much it on the men's side. I mean, I think you're going to see Murray struggle because that hip injury is going to be tough for him. I think Joker is going to come back strong. I think Rafa, if his knees are good, he needs to ride this momentum and really, really focus on doing well in Australia, because that will set him up for the year. Fed, same thing. It's a lot of pressure, I think, on a lot of guys. And I think, I mean, if I know this, I'm pretty sure these guys know this as well. I mean, I'm not, you know, anything special. These guys know what they're talking. You know, these guys are top players in the world. So it's gonna be really cool to see. And if you have nothing else to add on the women on the men's side, part, so we got to jump into the women's quickly here to just see how that's gonna break down.
No, I mean, the only other thing about the men's side is I'd be interested in hearing what everyone else has to say about it as well. I mean, I think you can literally choose 20 different paths on what the ATP World Tour is going to look like at this time next year.
Yes.
I mean, it can go anywhere. So it's very interesting. And that's it.
Okay. As I'm saying, okay, I got that. I was just actually looking at where Serena Williams is ranked before we say anything else. And she's 22 in the world right now. So As we look at the top 10 for women's as of this moment, Parsa, we have Simona Halep finishing number one by only 40 points over Garbine Muguruza. So she has 6,175. Muguruza has 6,135. We have Caroline Wozniacki at only 60 points behind Simona Halep. So you have the top three players in the world only distance between 60 points, which is nothing, man. Like, that's like a couple rounds at a decent tournament, right? So, and then you have Pliskova as number four, Venus Williams at five, who had a tremendous year, Svitolina, Ostapenko, reigning French Open champion, Garcia, who had a tremendous end to the season, Konta, who was kind of quiet, I want to say, throughout the second half of the season, Coco Vandeweghe, another American who had a, you know, pretty nice season, especially at the U.S. Open. You have Mogdanovic, who had an awful end to the season. I think she lost, 11-something matches in a row. And then Kuznetsova as number 12. We have, and I'm going to go to 13 with Sloane Stephens, because she won the U.S. Open, but only finished 13 in the world. So, I mean, I need to look at her results, because she, I don't know how the WTA rankings work, but for her to win the U.S. Open and only finish 13 means that the rest of her year was terrible, right? I know she was injured too, right? She had that ankle problem. She had that injury. So she was out for quite a long time. So maybe that's what it was. But, I mean, look, we've had, how many number ones did we have this year, Parsa? We had obviously Halep. We had Muguruza was number one for a bit. We had Pliskova that was number one for a bit. I mean, we had obviously Serena who was number one for a bit. So there was, you know, it was a carousel of different players that were in and out of that top spot. And for me to say who's going to finish number one next year, I mean, good luck. I think if Serena's dedicated and committed, I don't see Serena playing more than 8 tournaments next year, Barca. And as of now, is she even playing the Australian Open? Because that's not confirmed, right?
You know what I mean? She said she is, no?
I think, but now I've heard that she might not. You know, she just got married as well, too, right? Like, so unless, and we're at, what, November 21st now? So she's got roughly, you know, about a month to get in shape, right? Because, you know, Australian Open...
She looks okay. I mean, she, you know, I don't know. Who knows? It's Serena Williams, though. She's amazing. So
yeah, and Australian Open actually starts January 15th. So you knock off another week now because we're November 21st. So players have a roughly, you know, less than 2 months now, right? About 7 weeks or so until the Australian Open. But you just don't show up on January 14th and say, okay, let's get it going, right? You got to get down there. You got to get to Perth, you know, Hopman Cup, Brisbane, whatever, you know, all the other small tournaments that are there, Sydney, Auckland, whatever, and get there and...
Federer's rumored to be playing Hopman Cup December 30th or something.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, which is you know, ridiculous, actually, if we think about how poor our off-season is. You know, these players need at least 3 months. Like, the tour really needs to end. It's impossible, right, Parsa? I mean, am I saying tournaments are... So at the end of, September, we're going to say, okay, you guys are done. Take October, November, and December off. Never going to happen, the reality of it, but... I mean, that's just the way that it goes. I can't really think of a solution, but that would be ideal. But it's a joke, ultimately.
Well, you would try to probably. It's Australia. That's the one. You try to put the Asia swing in January, leading up to, you know, instead of it, so that you're in that area.
Yes.
You know what I mean, of the world. So that people make those trips for 5 weeks. They play Shanghai. They play. Whatever else, Beijing or Tokyo, then they go to, you know, either Brisbane or whatever, and then it's Australian Open, and then there's a break.
But you're always going to have the problems of somebody missing out, and then where do you put them? For instance, like in your neck of the woods, is that the New York Open is coming, right? In February. So if you put the Australian Open there, what happens to that? What happens to Dubai? What happens to, you know, all of these other tournaments, right? That are, you know, Rotterdam, you know, all the women's tournaments in Stuttgart, like that massive clay... No, sorry, that one's in April. But there's all of these other events, you know, that take place on both sides, like Doha for the women's and Dubai also for the women's. There's so many... Like, there has to be somebody's going to miss out always. And that's our problem, because we have an oversaturated world market and everybody wants a piece of that puzzle. And that's, you know, inherently somebody's going to always have to miss out. So it's just about the greater good, I guess, at that point, and who really makes it. But I mean, that's a different discussion. That's a whole nother podcast, really, that we would have to discuss. But I think if I'm looking at it now, I think Halep definitely sticks around the top five next year. I think Muguruza as well. Wozniacki, for me, I mean, credit to her. I mean, you know what? She's a fighter. You know, her consistent baseline game is still good enough to finish number three in the world. And she made, what, 8 finals last year? She won the tour finals. She's feeling good. Venus, still loving the game, finishing number 5. And, you know, she's got a lot of points to defend, but I don't see her. I think she's going to play until she's 40. I don't see her slowing down at all. I mean, I think she loves it, and she knows how to manage herself and, you know, her health and everything that's going on with her and her off-court stuff. And I mean, she knows what she's doing. You got Svitolina, who I think definitely is good for a slam at some point. Ostapenko, I think with her, you're going to see her maybe tail off a little bit. You know, that I don't think she'll defend Roland Garros. And I don't think she has the game at this point to win other majors just because of her serve. You know, Garcia, I think, can do some damage. Konta, I think she'll be okay. I mean, she can probably finish around the same spot. Coco Vandeweghe, again, around the same spot. I think McDonavich, I think, will drop. Kuznetsova, I'm saying, will end somewhere in the top 20. Sloane Stephens, I mean, I have no idea with her. She's all over the place, really. And then you have Serena Williams. What's she going to do next year? So it's, who knows? I mean, she's got, you know, it looks like, and deservedly so, she's completely happy right now. She's in love. She, you know, she loves her daughter. And how important is tennis going to be at this stage? Are we really going to fall?
I mean, if you looked at her wedding pictures, I don't know if you did, they were all, everything was just tennis, tennis, tennis. So I think it's pretty significant.
That's a great point. You know, she wants to get out there and say, listen, you know what? What's up, guys? You know what I'm saying? I've been away for a while, got married, I had a daughter. Everything is great. And you know what?
I think her body gets recharged.
Yeah. And she's been off for a year. So she hasn't been off for, you know what I mean? Like for 2 months, 3 months. She's been off for a year. And obviously, she's obviously going through a pregnancy, which is super difficult. But in terms of the mental aspect of it, you know, she's going to be ready to go. And I know she's been hitting some balls. And it's going to be an amazing story, so to speak. And, you know, her daughter is so cute, and it's been amazing to see pictures of her. And I would love to see her just come back and just ruin everybody and get back to the top and get back to the top of the world and say, listen, you know what? I don't know. It's going to be, but I would like to see her get to 25 slams. I think for me,
I think she can do it.
Yeah. And I think if she does, I think that's, then you can kind of wrap it up, because I don't think anybody's getting to 25 anytime soon. It's going to take a long time. You know, it's going to take another phenom to come out and play for 20 years and, you know, just dominate. And that's what it's going to be. And because I don't see any of the current crop of players being able to do that. I don't think Muguruza is winning 20 Grand Slams. I don't think Halep is winning anywhere near that. Wozniacki for sure not. Pliskova. I mean, who do we have here? You think Svitolina is going to win 20 Grand Slams? I really don't see it, man. And so that's my opinion. And I think that's why, you know, Serena is such a special player, and we have to, you know, really cherish everything she's done for the sport. And we'll see how that transpires. I mean, you know, before we wrap up, you know, the year here, Parsa, and we'll get into some of the just quick matches that we can remember. What are your thoughts overall on the WTA rankings and how they might shape up next year?
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, I think that I have a big question mark about all of it. You know, I am interested to hear how Sloane Stephens will do in terms of her U.S. Open hangover, whether she'll be fresh and raring to go and ready to replicate that feat over and over again, or is she going to have sort of that hangover year? I look at that as something very interesting. I look at Muguruza, whether she can continue to build and become a powerhouse. That's where I want to see if Halep can figure out how to get there, because she's had the opportunities and left them on the table. So I don't think that's worked out for her. You know, in terms of the others, you know, can this American crop sort of make an impact? So the Cocos of the world, Madison Keys, is she ready to take the next step? I'm not sure about that. And then you have your old stars there in your Caroline Wozniacki, which we know she's not going to win, but Serena Williams, Venus Williams, you know, can they do what they used to do? And that always becomes the question when you enter a new year with aging superstars, is how well their body holds up. I think for 2018, for tennis, the men and the women, I think you have to put a big question mark. I think it's a, I don't know, type of year in terms of predictions where, Nima, I mean, for the last 8 years, I think we've had, it's been very sort of easy to tell. Besides this past year, it's been easy to tell what's kind of going to happen. You could say Serena, you can say Rafael Nadal, and you're pretty much not going to go wrong. And, you know, we can't safely say that anymore. We experienced a little bit of that with Federer a couple years back, last year, you know, dropping all the way out of the top 10. You know, and then he comes back and nearly captures number one. Nadal completely out of the whole thing, and he captures number one. You know, Serena completely out of all of it. I would put some money on that she's going to be capturing number one again, too, even with a limited schedule. So I think class will rise if Serena's prepared and ready to go. I think she will end up number one in the world. That's what I think.
And, you know, Parsa, we haven't mentioned one player on the women's side that's a very interesting player. And that's number 16 in the world right now, Maria Sharapova.
And Maria Sharapova, I mean, we did not mention her.
16 in the world, pretty much nothing to defend. She just won a small title to end off the season. I mean, like, sky's the limit for her, too. I mean, I follow her on Instagram. She's training every single day. She's ready to go. And she says, I can't wait to get down to Australia. So, I mean, she's...
I don't know if that means big match wins, though, Nima.
No, I completely...
She still can lose matches.
100% you know? She can.
Even when she was 100% in it and, you know...
But the desire is there.
What was that?
The desire is there, though.
The desire is definitely... But I think every aging athlete has that desire, you know? I don't know.
Of course.
You retire if you don't have the desire, you know?
Sure.
But time is the key. The body ages, and it's not always about what you want, but sometimes it's just time to move on. You know, it's the body is really the one that gives you the ultimate answer on what you can and can't do, and I think that's where it comes down to more than anything.
Of course. Okay, so Parsa, before we wrap up this week's show, we want to talk just quickly about some of the match highlights of this year, top matches. Start with the men's side. For me, what I had Nadal, Federer, Australian Open final. I had Nadal, Dimitrov, Australian Open semi. And then I also had Kyrgios and Federer, semifinals of Miami, the Miami Open. I mean, that match, man, when I'm working out, I just put that match on and I'm just watching it. Like, believe it or not, it's just such a cool match to watch, like, super high intensity. You know, Kyrgios was serving out of his shoes. And, you know, Federer just held off and he won in three breakers. I mean, it was just an incredible match. Really, I mean, I urge people to watch it again because it was a really fun match to watch. And then on the women's side, I liked the Halep Sharapova match at the US Open. I liked the Australian Open finals between Venus and Serena. That was a good one for me. And then probably as well, you know, Venus's matches at Wimbledon. Those were very captivating for me, just seeing her, you know, battling through, getting to the finals, and unfortunately losing. But, I mean, all credit to Muguruza for winning that. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that or any of those matches that I mentioned, if you want to highlight anything on those.
I mean, I think it was a thrilling 2017 Australian Open final. You know, what was it, 3-1 down in the fifth?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it started all right there. The Federer train got going, and Nadal got inspired, and, you know, it just it just snowballed there, and it was a little bit of a classic year, 2017, in that way. Unfortunately, you know, for me, it was a year that it was classic because a lot of guys dropped out. And I wish it would have been just class because they played that well and they beat the best guys in the world and were 1-2. So I look at that match, and the other match that I you know, really or run that I really enjoyed was Sloane Stephens' run at the 2017 US Open.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoyed her energy. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed a lot of aspects of it. And for someone who you could see, you could clearly, if anyone out there, you know, agrees with me, I'd love to know. You could see the tension. Like, she wanted to erupt and go back and slip into her old habits, but she made the change. She created the change. She created ownership over her change. And she held it together all the way to the top of the mountain. And I think that's amazing. You know, as a coach, as a person who wants to see people do as well as they can, I think that was a really, really, really inspiring thing to see, that she made those crucial changes in a life, a tennis life full of erratic results and misunderstandings. For at least 2 weeks, she put it together, and it was a dream run.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's great for the game as well. And, you know, very engaging personality. And I think that with Sloane, you know, it would be great to see her, because she's had moments, man. She played well at the Australian Open. She's, you know, she's been in and around these events, and she's proven her class. And it's just about, you know, consistently building that momentum to, you know, to really get, you know, that crowd behind you at every single tournament, as well as just the worldwide media, you know, get pumping you up and getting it going. So, yeah, I mean, Parsa, I think, you know, it was a great year. I mean, once again, man, we finished another year of doing all of these podcasts, these previews, reviews for all of these events. Looking forward to next year and getting back with everybody for 2018 in the podcast. So with that said, Parsa, I'd like to give you a big thank you for everything you've done this year, and, you know, all the information that you've given to all of our wonderful listeners. I wish you all the best going into 2018, and looking forward to, you know, picking us back up in the new year.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nima. And what a treat that everyone around the world, you know, gets tennis connected, and obviously you're tennis connected, and they get to be a part of your passion, and they get to share quality information, not only with each other, they get to hear inside scoops from someone who's deep inside the game and knows what's happening in the locker rooms, on the court, and all around it. And, you know, what a treat and a pleasure to continue year after year with you, and look forward to 2018 for sure.
Thank you very much, my friend. And definitely, as you said, looking forward to next year. I'd like to also give a big shout out to all of our listeners. You guys make this happen for us, and we, you know, we love you guys, and keep giving us our feedback, and looking forward to next year, and have a great you know, holiday season as well as New Year's. Also want to give a final shout out to Grand Slam Tennis Tours for anybody looking to get down to the Australian Open, which I can promise you it's going to be an amazing event. Make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. They're also official tour provider, so they can get you literally on the court, you know, watching these, because now they have seating actually on the court, Parsa, in the corners. They can get you those seats. And, you know, you're going to be watching everything, like, literally up, like, there's nothing closer than that. So I encourage you guys to hit those guys up. And lastly, again, download this podcast on iTunes. Follow Parsa on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, everything that you can. Myself at Tennis Connected. We got some really interesting and cool things happening for you guys with some new world-class writers coming in for January. And with that said, once again, thank you. And talk to you guys in 2018.